Welcome to the scorching arena of valor and the crucible of courage. This is the Forged in the Fires podcast with Fireman Rob. Here in the inferno of life's greatest challenges, heroes are shaped and legends are born. Every episode is a torchlight of wisdom, casting a glow on the paths walked by those who've braved the flames and emerged stronger. In this furnace of fortitude, we'll explore tales of resilience, bravery, and the unyielding human spirit. Each guest brings their own spark of insight, lighting up the darkness and guiding us through the smoke of adversity. With Fireman Rob at the helm, prepared to delve into conversations that smolder with significance and stories that kindle the soul. It's not just a podcast, it's a beacon for all who seek to rise from the ashes and glow with purpose. So stoke the fires of your curiosity and ready your heart for tales of triumph and transformation. The flames are roaring. The stage is ablaze. Welcome to the Forged in the Fires podcast. Let the journey begin.
All right, welcome back to Forged in the Fires podcast. I'm your host, Fireman Rob. Today's guest is, you know, he comes to me from Australia. It's an amazing individual who is, he's leading other people to their truest potential, but at the same time, his life experiences have led to why he's able to help other people find their capabilities and at the same time, just live in a different space in their own mind. So it's so great to have you on the show, Jem Fuller.
Hey, Rob, thanks so much for having me on the show, man. When I came across your show and I had a bit of a listen to what you were up to and I read a bit of your background as well, that's why I reached out. I was like, hey, dude, I'd love to have a chat with you. That'd be great.
Oh, I love going through all your stuff. You have so much stuff and you've had so many life experiences. I love it. Was that you as a kid too?
Yeah, look, I guess so. I was lucky enough to be brought up in a family. My dad was from England, and my mum was from regional Australia, and dad was working with a global company when I was little. So I was born overseas, and then we traveled a lot, you know, when I was a kid. So I knew there was a big wide world out there, and just enough to really kind of whet my appetite. So when I was 18 years old and finished high school, I just took off and spent most of my 20s and early 30s traveling around the world.
That's amazing. And did you have a plan when you started off traveling,
or was it just zero plan? Zero plan.
You got into a boat, had no sail and no oar, and you're like, "Let's just go."
Yeah. I used to love that. I used to love buying a one-way ticket into a really foreign land. And just arriving with no idea what I was going to do or what was going on. I used to do that and be away for a couple of years, you know, just kind of seeing where we would go.
That's iconic. I mean, that is, but you had to develop a mindset to be able to do that. So where did that come from?
I don't know, man. I've always been adventurous. I was also a reaction to my father, and you know, I've written about this in my book. I loved the man, but I also didn't want to be him. I did everything I could to rebel against him. And I don't know whether this is a natural father son phenomenon, you know. But he was quite conservative. He was a lovely man. He was a good Christian, and he worked. He gave a lot of his time to community and. But he was also quite conservative, you know, very straight down the middle. And yeah. So I became the opposite. I became a punk anti-establishment kind of, you know, break the system. And I just did not want to be a part of it. So I did everything I could to run away from it, I guess.
Wow. It's so amazing to me to hear stories of that. And when you were on your travels, was there any point at which you went into your own head and go, maybe this wasn't the right decision?
Oh yeah. Lots of introspection over the years and, you know, ups and downs. In my late 20s, I had a proper identity crisis. You know, I kind of woke up one morning in London and I looked at myself in the mirror and I just didn't I didn't understand what I saw, you know, and I had got to a real low point. You know, I looked in the mirror and I saw ugliness, and I saw this person that I didn't like or identify with, you know, and I had multicolored dreadlocks and I had facial piercings. And this is back in the 90s before facial piercings were a thing. And, you know, I was covered in tattoos and, you know, it's interesting at that low point, I realized that I'd actually developed a stutter. That's how low my confidence had got. And quite often if I was dealing with someone in public, like if I got on a public bus and I was trying to buy a ticket from the bus driver, or if I was in a shop trying to buy some food, quite often the person would have to ask me again, "Excuse me, what did you say?" Because I was speaking so quietly, because I was so unassured of myself. And that midlife crisis, which was accompanied with a broken heart, my teenage sweetheart and I had just broken up. And I was lost, man. I was really, really lost, you know. And then my sister was the angel in that moment. My sister from Australia was traveling around Europe, and she arrived in London and she saw me. I had also started to lose my way with drugs as well. And my sister came and kind of saved me and said, "Hey, come on, let's get back to India. I'm going to be there in December. See if you can get over there again." So I got my act together and got over to India, and then, you know, sobered up and spent years wandering around barefoot and growing dreadlocks and finding myself again, you know.
Hey, you got to do what you got. But that's, I think it's amazing. Like, how many times do you feel like you kind of reinvented who Jem was?
Yeah, lots of times. Yeah. Lots of times. And, you know, gradually as well. It's not always just like you snap your fingers and you go from one to the other. It's a process, obviously, but there are punctuation marks in the journey, you know, like in my early 40s, I had my proper, what people call a midlife crisis, but for me, it was a midlife awakening. And that really was, that there was a period of about a year, 18 months there of massive change, you know, and I lost my corporate job and I lost my marriage and my house. And luckily, I kept my two sons 50-50, so week on, week off with my boys. And I've been in that arrangement for 10 years now. But at that point in time, you know, a lot of stuff came to a head. So I was in my early 40s and I'd had all this time of trying to figure out, you know, it's like what anyone who's introspective or curious about our place in life, you know, we're trying to figure ourselves out. We're trying to figure out humanity. We're trying to figure out our place in the world, you know, and it's not an easy thing to do. And then, yeah, I had some big realizations back then. And then I really went to work on myself. So this last chapter of my life, which has been the most beautiful over the last 10 years of doing a lot of really beautiful work on my relationship with self, a lot of self-love, self-acceptance, self-okayness work, which then means that you can actually get out of the way and not make it about you anymore. The more okay you are with yourself, then the less it needs to be about you, and you can really come to a place of service and being there for others, which is what I've been able to do in the last 10 years. Yeah, and luckily make money from it as well, so I can feed the kids whilst I'm in a role of serving others, which is really beautiful.
That's amazing, and it's a continuous journey. I think a lot of people try to think and find that one moment where I'm good, that's not true, is it?
No. Well, I mean, life
can have
gets
them,
easier.
But not all.
Yeah, you can have them, but not all the time. And I've found that for me anyway, life is just getting easier with the habitual one percenters. So over a period of time with consistency, the little one percenters, like for me, those are daily meditation, daily affirmations, you know, 60 seconds of cold water at the end of my hot shower. Pausing throughout the day to have little moments of just pausing and recalibrating. Exercise, obviously, food, sleep. These little one percenters, when these become just a part of the way you live your life, life does get easier. Now, that doesn't mean there's not going to be hard stuff. You know, when a loved one dies, it hurts, man. There's no way around that. But every experience, whether it's a hard experience or a pleasant experience, they all tend to get just a little bit easier, I think.
Yeah, and I love the when I want to go into your book, The Art of Conscious Communication. Talk to me more about what the premise was behind when you did this book, and what was that? What was the thought process in saying, okay, is this a book I want to write for me to read, or is this a book I want for others to understand my journey?
I wrote the book hoping to help other people.
Yeah.
You know, I really did. And I know that people in my line of work, you know, coach, speaker, retreat facilitator, we get told write a book because it'll help you, you know, with your career and your profession, and it'll position you as an expert and et cetera. And I understand all of that, but that's not the primary reason I wrote the book. I really did write the book hoping to help people. And, you know, I've always been fascinated in communication because it is fundamental to our ability to exist as a species. You know, if we can't communicate with each other, we don't even exist. And we only really know ourselves and our place in life and our place in relationship with others through our ability to communicate. And so it gets overlooked as a fundamental capability, but it's deteriorating. You know, it's sad to look at the state of play around the world. Oh, people are just shouting at each other. You know, if you're pro-life or pro-choice, or if you're anti-vax or pro-vax, or if you're Muslim or Jew, or if you're blue or red, you know, and people are just, the communication has deteriorated to a point where people are just literally shouting at each other and killing each other, which is terrible. Right. So I thought, look, I think we could do well. Humanity could do well to put our focus back a little bit more to conscious communication and compassion and things like this.
I love that. And actually, I was saying, like, when you write the book for yourself, it's almost that conscious reminder. I love that, because it's really what you lived. And I think that's so powerful for, you know, as a speaker. I know it's hard because you're given similar speeches and you're talking about things, but it's the power of your experience is what is coming through in this book. And I love that. And I think communication, when you talk about communication, you've been in different places throughout the world. Is there one kind of common thing that you saw in the different cultures that you were in that is fundamental to communication?
Yeah, I think it really helps if we're going to try to communicate across differences. So if I'm sitting with, you know, a guy in the mountains of Pakistan, and he has a very, very different cultural, geographical, religious, spiritual understanding of life to me.
Right.
The best place to start is with the stuff we have in common. That's where we should start. Let's start by connecting on the stuff we have in common. And that stuff is just beneath the surface, man. You know, we all need food and water. We all need shelter. We all love our families, right? We all love our children. When I say we all, I'm sure there are some people out there that are messed up enough that they don't know how to do that. But generally,
like, wait a second,
right?
You're not talking to me, Jim.
Yeah. So to the people out there who don't love their children, I feel really sorry for you, because there's something wrong. But generally speaking, we have these things in common. You know, I don't know whether you saw my TEDx talk, but I mentioned this in the TEDx talk. There was this university student in Pakistan, and I met him on a bus. And I met him on a bus the week after. So this is going back to 1998. And it was the week after the American government had sent cruise missiles into the northwestern frontier province where I'd just been, in between Pakistan and Afghanistan, to try and kill Osama bin Laden back in 1998, right? So this is pre-9/11.
Right.
And so then they'd sent these cruise missiles in, and then this university student was showing me the front page of the newspaper on this public bus that we were on, and it was saying that jihad had been declared against the states on the front page of this Pakistani newspaper. Oh, wow. And I was like, what does that mean?
What does that mean?
And he said, no, they will not stop. There's going to be retribution for this, because innocent people were killed with these cruise missiles. Anyway, so then I was having this chat with this university student, and thankfully for me, he spoke a bit of English because he was educated. But he said the most profound, simple and profound thing to me. It really touched my heart. He said to me, if we cut your skin here and we cut my skin here, we have the same color blood.
Huh.
And just in that simple metaphor, I thought, you know what? Just beneath the surface of our skin, we're all the same. Fire. We're the same. We're the same species, you know. And you know, I'm a bit of an old hippie, and I'm a pacifist, and I really, ideally, I would love the world to just all get along and share resource. And I know that's a crazy ideal, and it's probably not going to happen. Well, certainly not in my lifetime, anyway. But I still aim for it. You know,
you
I still
can
dream about that. I still hope for that. Yeah. I think it's something to aim for.
And I love what you just said there, because I think it's, we get so convoluted in all of the other aspects that we can't control. And there's so much value in what you said. You know, if I cut here and you cut here, we are the same. We're humans. And at the end of the day, I love that you, you know, build it, resilience is one of your things that you talk about.
Yeah.
What does it take to have that resilient mindset in all this noise that we're having right now? What would you say to people to have that resilient mindset? Because it is noisy. And I'm sure there's people that feel like they can't be themselves. What would you say to those people?
Yeah. Start practicing meditation, mindfulness meditation especially, and affirmation. So there is real power behind affirmation, the power of language. And we're understanding this neuroscientifically now. We can measure it with the benefits of some of the imaging machinery that we use for neuroscience. But affirmations looks like this, right? So you pick a positive perspective. Look at the perspective of really how insignificant humans are in the grand scheme of the universe, because all you need to do is go and look out at the stars on a clear night and you'll understand that. But also to remember that, you know, that you are exactly the way you are supposed to be. You are precisely who you're supposed to be in this moment. And how do I know that to be true? Well, reality told me, because there you are, right? You're not somebody else. You're not more like him or her. You're not faster or smarter. You're not better looking. You're not anything. You are exactly in this moment, apparently, who you're supposed to be, right?
Wow.
And so remembering that. And that doesn't mean that you're not going to improve and grow and evolve and become a different version of you in the future. If you want to do that, you will. But in this moment, just to come to a place of complete self-acceptance, self-love, self-okayness, and go, hey, I'm enough just the way I am. Now, so you think that thought, but then you say it out loud.
Right.
I am enough, you know, and I do deserve love. And I do deserve to give love. And then whatever your affirmation is for you. But this needs to become a daily practice. So when you combine 5 minutes, I mean, for me, it's half an hour a day. But just 5 minutes of sitting and just noticing your breath. That's it. Just sitting and noticing your breath. If you combine that with some positive affirmations each morning, over the long term, and I mean after about 12 months of doing this and then into the years of this becoming a way that you live, you notice how much more calm and at peace you are with everything.
I love that. Now here's my ultimate question is, in this world of like need for instant gratification, how do you start to develop that you said 12 months, and like my mind goes to 12 months. Holy cow. You know, and I'm sure people are like, well, how do I start that process? And if I break down and I don't get all 12 months in a row, can I still get that clarity? Can I still get that calmness?
Yeah, absolutely. So, and that's a great point. Thank you. So in the moment that you choose to sit and meditate for 5 minutes, and by the way, there's apps to do this, obviously. And, you know, I mean, I've got an introduction to mindfulness course that I can make free for your listeners if you want. We can put that in show notes later. But if you, in the moment that you choose to be someone who cares enough about the quality of their mind and their life to sit in that moment and meditate, that's the gratification. That's the instant gratification of sitting there and going, do you know what? I choose now to sit and meditate for 5 minutes because I know it's going to be good for me and I deserve to look after myself. So I'm going to feel good about that choice in that moment. The rest of it is not something to aim for. You know, when I say 12 months, it's not like you think, right, well, when I hit the 12-month mark, I'm going to notice a difference. You don't. It's a very, very gradual thing that's happening all the way along. So the reason I say 12 months is because I don't want people to think they can just take the red pill or the blue pill like in the Matrix. And everything changes. You got to do the work.
You got to do what? You got to do the work? Oh, man.
You got to do the work. But doing the work, if you shift your perspective to thinking by choosing to do the work, I'm actually choosing me. I'm choosing to give to myself, you know, and so that's the thing. It's like Atomic Habits, the James Clear book, and he talks about if you're standing there looking at the burger or the salad in that moment, I mean, whether you eat the burger or the salad is not going to change your body shape in that moment. But in the moment, what changes if you choose the burger is your sense of relationship with yourself, whether you respect yourself and like yourself or not. But when you choose the salad, you feel good about yourself. You go, actually, I'm good on me. Now, that doesn't change your body shape that day. But your state of mind is better,
right?
People
would love that.
Yeah. Give me the blue pill. Come on.
Give me the instant salad.
Yeah, right.
I love on your website, you give a lot on your website. Go to jemfuller.com. You can reset your emotions. It's a free course there. And I want to talk about your free ebook that you have on there, the four things you can do to live an easier life.
Yeah.
Tell me more about this book, because I think I love the first question. Have you reached your potential? And I would have to say 80% of the people that would look at that go, no, I haven't.
So that book is actually me sharing the four conversations, the teachings that I facilitate on our retreats. So we run retreats in the Himalaya in northwest India, and in Bali, in the jungles of Bali, and also here in Australia. And there are four conversations that we have on these retreats. And the first one is a reconnection to your relationship with self. So what's your internal world like and your relationship with yourself, and how do I nurture that? How do I curate that? And then there's a relationship with a sense of purpose or meaning and connection to the greater system. So how do I access flow? What does that look like? If I'm kind of swimming upstream in the river, how do I shift my course a little bit so that I can swing around and get back with the flow of the river again?
Oh, wow.
And then a reconnection to others. So a sense of, understanding human behavior and understanding other people's behavioral patterns, understanding the matrix of human behavior, so that people who seem really different to you, you get an understanding of, that's how they think, that's how they make decisions, or, you know. So understanding that human behavior.
Yeah.
And then the fourth conversation is really finding a way to have some clarity around your purpose in life. What is that for you? And so people leave the retreats with a clear understanding of why they believe they're here and what they want to do about it.
I love it. Make sure you go to jemfuller.com. You can find out more. You got a lot of free things that you're giving away to people to be able to find their potential and live their truest life. I always end with three questions. Are you ready, Jem?
I'm ready, Rob.
All right. If you could go back to your 18-year-old self and give yourself one piece of advice, what would that be?
You are enough. You are enough just the way you are.
Oh. Okay, I just listened to that advice and I'm good now. All right, second one is all people are going through challenges and struggles in their own way in their lives. If you could give them two habits, and you've given them more than the two habits throughout this conversation, but if you could just give them two habits right now to incorporate into their daily lives, to continue to live forward, what would that be?
Start those morning affirmations in the positive tense, whatever they are for you. And also throughout the day, this is one of the most powerful habits that I've created over the last 10 years. Pause often. So literally throughout the day, in between a couple of tasks, so you've finished one task, you're on the way to the next thing, just pause just for 5 seconds and just notice your breath and then continue.
Oh, that's awesome. I love that. Mm. All right. This last one's going to be fun. If you could have coffee at a firehouse table, so in other words, no questions off the table, you can ask anything, everything will be answered. With three people, they can be deceased or alive. Who would those three be?
Martin Luther King Jr.
Yes.
The Dalai Lama
Love it.
And Prince.
And Prince.
Prince.
Wow.
My partner and I just watched Purple Rain again last night, the old 1980s movie. It's so bad.
So it's timing.
It's timing so bad. But he was a genius. He was an absolute musical genius. And he had a pretty rough life growing up. But I would just love to get inside. I'm a muso, and I would love to get inside his head and try and ask him and understand about how he came up with some of those musical compositions. You know?
Oh, my gosh. I love it. I love it. Well, Jim, it's been an absolute honor to have you on here. I greatly appreciate it.
Rob, thank you so much for having me on your show. I wish we could talk longer, dude, but I've got to bounce.
Aye. We'll talk again. I promise you.
Yeah, let's do that. That'd be good.
Thanks for listening and supporting the Forged in the Fires podcast with Fireman Rob. Remember, don't forget to like and subscribe to this podcast. And please share this episode with a friend or family member. To find out more about Fireman Rob, or if you have a question, go to www.firemanrob.com. Until next time, live your life forged in the fires.